Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we are on a Tuesday, absolutely loaded. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Live in Los Angeles, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. In 1 hour, Joy, all the coaching hires in the NFL are done. All the free agency is done. All the drafting is done. I'm going to go with my Herd hierarchy, the 10 best teams in the league today.
Ooh, 10 best on paper?
10 best on paper today. The teams, I think, are the 10 best on paper. A couple of omissions that won't land well, and a couple of teams inserted that I think are going to be huge surprise teams.
So beware Twitter.
Beware Twitter and Cleveland and whatever. It's great to have you in.
Good morning.
I thought this was years ago. Phil Jackson would tweak the NBA refs. Lakers coach Phil Jackson, Bulls coach, he would tweak the refs. And the NBA would often fine him. Don't talk about refs during a series, trying to manipulate the series. Well, the Rockets did that and then some. The Rockets tabulated the net result of 81 potential missed calls and non-calls in Game 7 of the series between the Rockets and Golden State, and they leaked it to the media, and it was obtained by the place I used to work. The Rockets had a full report listing 81 blown calls that cost the Rockets 18.5 points, 18.6. They went full analytics nerd. The Rockets also argue that veteran officials exhibit the most bias against our players. Oh, God, this is a backfire move. This is intentional and a timely leak to influence the refs tonight. By the way, I just want to know, all you geniuses in Houston, in that analytics report, did you have the part where you went 0 for 27 on threes in that game? What was that in the report? Remember that? You had that stretch in that game. You were 0 for 27 on threes. Was that included in the report? Oh, that was an omission. So let's blame it on the veteran officials. As I said yesterday, veteran officials don't fall for this BS. They don't fall for this hardened, flopping soccer stuff. I'm the NBA. I hand out a huge fine to the Houston Rockets. This is not tweaking the NBA. This is trying to embarrass the NBA. They went full analytics nerd here, and I don't think it's going to work. And you know what they say about karma? Karma is a you-know-what. Scott Foster is refereeing the game tonight. Scott Foster has a long-running feud with James Harden and Chris Paul. The Rockets are 0-6 in the last six games Scott Foster has officiated. Now, maybe the Rockets, they knew he was officiating tonight, because that's assigned a while back, and they thought, let's get ahead of it. But I think this comes across as they're trying to embarrass the NBA. I think it's a terrible look, and I think Adam Silver should fine them. Listen, let's be honest about this. The Rockets' formula to get to the championship was more calls and more free throws. This is where analytics fails. This is where analytics fails. Here's what analytics does not tell you: that the NHL, the NFL, and the NBA do not want calls, free throws, and penalties deciding Super Bowls. So in all those sports, NBA, NFL, and NHL, refs swallow their whistles in the playoffs. And the further it goes in the playoffs, NFC Championship, ask the Saints, ask the Rockets last year. The further playoffs go, the more viewers, the more the games mean, the more hockey, football, and basketball officials get out of the way. Analytics. Did analytics tell you that, Houston? What the NBA doesn't want is what the NFL faced years ago, where Joy and I would come on the air this fall, and when we talked about big games, we just talked about games. But a year earlier, I would come on my show and talk about catch, no catch. And Roger Goodell came on my show and said, we don't want every game. We're literally talking about the interpretation of rules. We want you to celebrate the NFL. We want to have fun. Steve Kerr talked about this after game one. All we're talking about is the officiating.
It's disappointing because the focus should be on two teams who played extremely hard. I mean, watching the tape, you know, both teams just got after it and competed. But, you know, we just watched the tape upstairs. You don't think there were 10 calls that we thought we got fouled? I mean, this is how it goes.
Okay. Never forget this. I said this yesterday. Leagues have a right to their own interpretation and their own officiating territory. Houston's trying to manipulate officials. Never forget this. Remember this, Joy? A couple Super Bowls ago, Eagles, Patriots. All year, we complained about catch, no catch. And in the Super Bowl, the NFL did not tell the Eagles, did not tell the Patriots, did not tell Belichick, did not tell Doug Peterson, did not tell the teams. The NFL decided in that Super Bowl, common sense prevails. If it looks like a catch, it's a catch. They went against their own rule, and they gave nobody a heads up. And you know why they did? Because they're the league. And my boss can do what they want. And the NFL can do what they want. And the NBA can do what they want. And the NFL decided without giving anybody a heads up, we're not going to have the Super Bowl turn into a seven-day argument over the interpretation of a catch-no-catch rule. And they knew they were going to change the rule, and they did a month later. And the NBA knows they're going to change this landing area rule. They know they're going to do it in the offseason. And they're not going to let these playoffs, and this is the finals, let's be honest. The Rockets-Warriors, probably the finals. I mean, I picked the Celtics to beat the Warriors, but this feels like the finals, right? They're not going to have this series dominated by, well, the interpretation of the landing rule. Common sense is going to prevail. And this is where analytics falls flat. I've told Daryl Morey this. I like analytics. I'm not anti-analytics. But I'm a big believer that you cannot reduce sports to numbers. These are humans. These are athletes. I'd pay money to watch Harden. I'd pay money to watch Westbrook. I want to pay money to watch Brady and LeBron. These are the world's greatest athletes we're watching. Let's not reduce them to a spreadsheet. Now, I think numbers matter. I think they matter. But the reality, the reason Brad Stevens and Kyrie get along better today than 2 months ago, because they talk, because they're human beings, not human doings, not numbers on a spreadsheet. Houston is trying to reduce this series to a spreadsheet. And the NBA is like, nah, no, we're not doing that. And the NFL did this 2 years ago in the Super Bowl. They said, no. We're not going to have this game become a six-day slog of guys like me and women like Joy coming on the air and complaining for 6 days about officials. We're not going to have it. And so the NFL didn't give anybody a heads up. They said, no, we got to change things right now. And that's what the NBA is doing, and I applaud them. If you try to manipulate officials, and that's what Houston's doing here, leaking this memo, flopping, they're manipulating. The referees, the league is saying, okay, we're going to take a little territory back, and we're not going to give you a heads up. We're not going to release a memo. We have a right as a league to take a little bit of this territory back. By the way, Scott Foster's officiating the game tonight. Never forget what James Harden said in February about Scott Foster.
Scott Foster, man, he's I never really talk about officiating or anything like that, but just rude and arrogant. I mean, you aren't able to talk to him throughout the course of a game, and it's like, how do you build that relationship with officials? And it's not even that call. Like, it's just, you know, who he is on that floor. It's pretty frustrating.
By the way, I don't want you to have a relationship with the officials. There's rules. You're a player. I don't want you to be able to curry favor, buddy up. I remember years ago hearing a story where a Major League Baseball umpire every year asked Barry Bonds for some autographed baseballs for his charity. I don't want that. I don't want you to have great relationships with the officials. I don't need them to be awful, but I don't want you currying favor with them. And it's not an official's job to, by the way, invite you to birthday parties. I'm Scott Foster. I'm a ref. I officiated in college to make money and intramurals. And the first thing I learned very quickly, don't smile, don't laugh, don't frown. Poker face, entire game. I wanted to be as robotic as I could. I didn't want anybody to think they made me mad, they made me happy, I had any influence. Because if I smile to Harden, that means the guy guarding Harden thinks I like Harden. When I officiated, and this was like 2 years of college. My whole thing was robotic. I wanted nobody to think there was any influence. That's what Scott Foster does. That's what veteran NBA officials do, mostly. They get out of the personality business. I don't, Ed Hockley and his gun show, I could do without. Dick Bavetta and his humor, I could do without. I don't want a lot of ego. I don't want to know your personality. I don't want you being friends with the players. Come in, make calls. Thanks for flying United.
Well, there's a reason there's no name on the back of their jersey.
Thank you.
And I can't think of a worse job for you.
I know. I had to be a robot.
That is not for you.
$8 a game at Eastern Washington, it paid for a lot of beers.
I mean, that's good pay.
$8. I do three games a night, $24.
That's a decent college job.
It's what you do. Divorced parents, guys got to eat. You're ref for 2 years.
Job for you. I can't see you holding a straight face for 2 minutes.
I was the Scott Foster. Nobody liked me.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
The Philadelphia 76ers beat Toronto last night. I love watching Philadelphia play. I love watching them. I feel so lucky. Outside of LeBron not in the playoffs, all the fun teams to watch. Boston's in. I love watching them. I love watching the Sixers. I love watching the Warriors. I love watching the Rockets. Portland's now a fun watch. Denver doesn't do a ton for me. Either does Toronto. Milwaukee's fun. I like Giannis. But it's funny about Philadelphia. All this BS about the process. The only reason the Sixers season isn't dead this morning is because of a player named Jimmy Butler. Here was one of his moves last night.
Embiid with Siakam helping. Trying to work through two defenders. Finds Butler. Oh, Jimmy Butler, bullseye. 28 for Butler.
By the way, the new GM, Elton Brand of the Sixers, smart dude, he didn't buy into the process. He scrapped it. And he said, get me Tobias Harris and get me Jimmy Butler. But analytically, they're really good players. Let's scrap the process. And since he did that, Joy and I have acknowledged we like the Sixers. They got more good players. Listen, all this hipster BS with the process is a bunch of hooey. You want to know why the process works in Golden State? Because they got Steph and Kevin Durant and Clay. You want to know why the process and analytics work in Boston? They got Kyrie Irving. You want to know why the process works and all the analytics work in Houston? They have James Harden. That stuff works if you have stars. If you have great finishers. Steph, Harden, Kyrie, Clay. You can run that stuff in Memphis all day long. It's not going to work. Analytics are a bunch of hooey. The process in Philly was a bunch of hooey. It works now because they've got four good players, and Elton Brand's like, get me dudes. Jimmy Butler's a dude. I mean, Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, not process guys, guys they traded for. Elton Brand was like, get me guys. He did it. He got rid of shooters, by the way. Analytic guys love the shooters. He's like, Jimmy Butler's not a good shooter, but boy, he's a good player. And Tobias Harris, hot and cold, but boy, he's a big, strong athlete. Been on a bunch of teams. I like him. And suddenly now Philadelphia has home court advantage in the second round of the playoffs. Last year, they had the analytic guys. Okay, so I'm really into Philadelphia's talent. Now, I do think there's some limitations, and I understand the media tends to fall in love with gimmicks and catchphrases and analytics because it makes them feel smart. We get it. You don't. We're the media. We're smart. We get analytics. The stuff only works if you have the guys that can get it done, right? The fascinating thing about Philadelphia, and we're all going to watch this thing unfold, and I think it's fascinating. They have four really good players: Embiid, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, and Tobias Harris. Elton Brand, who you got? And I have no problem. They're all, Embiid's a brilliant player, but is often hurt, and seven-footers don't get healthier once they've been hurt. He's missed 64% of his Sixer games. Then there's Ben Simmons, who is a brilliant, transformational 6'10.5 point guard, but can't shoot and doesn't work well with Embiid. Then there's Jimmy Butler, an unbelievable A-athlete, A-player in the NBA, doesn't always get along with coaches and young teammates. And then there's Tobias Harris, who wants to get paid, who's going to get expensive, who's got a great NBA body, but has been on a bunch of teams for a reason. He's not a star. And they're going to have to choose a couple of these guys. And I've told you my belief on this. I'd go Simmons and Jimmy Butler. Because Embiid, I'll say it again, it took six treatments per day to get him on the floor in these games. He missed playoff games last year. He's missed playoff games this year. Six treatments a day to get him on the floor for these games. Seven-footers don't get healthier. He's got trade value. He's got a big contract, but it's not egregious. He's a great player. Socially, he's fantastic. He'll light up your city. I'd move him. It'd be painful, but I'd move him. And I'd get a shooter somewhere. And I would keep Ben Simmons because they don't make 6'10.5 point guards. He's in an elite class. He and Magic are the class. 6'9 or bigger point guards who can see the floor. can't shoot, but get him shooters. I would keep Jimmy Butler because he's really, really talented. And I think his game works with Ben Simmons. He can do what Simmons can't. Simmons can do what he can't. And Tobias Harris, I'd keep him if I could for the right number. He's going to want to get paid. I'll probably have to move him or get somebody else. The fascinating thing about the Sixers is they got four dudes, and they're going to have to probably select two to three of them. And I'm on Simmons because he doesn't get hurt. He's a unique all-time talent. He may not be able to shoot, but analytically, he gets the ball to shooters as well as almost anybody in the league. And Jimmy Butler, they just don't make a lot of Jimmy Butlers. Veteran guy, tough as nails, big shot maker. He's a great athlete. He's just a better player than Tobias Harris. And Embiid, as much as I like him, sometimes you have to move guys you like. It's not a center's league. He doesn't handle a ball. Can shoot an occasional three, but he's not the future of the league. All that said, good win for Philadelphia. Like him a lot. By the way, here's the coach, Brett Brown, after the game last night, telling you what he thinks of Jimmy Butler.
This was James Butler. That was the adult in the gym. He was just a tremendous sort of rock. He willed us to a lot of different situations. He was a stud. He really was an adult in the gym.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I'd keep him. I just think Jimmy Butler's a very unique talent. Now, a lot of people think he's going to go to L.A. Boy, if LeBron could get him, LeBron's game works with Jimmy Butler. Anybody that handles the ball, your game's going to work with Jimmy Butler. That I like.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast on the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. You like Colin's show, you'll like mine. This week, all NFL draft. I go over the things I hated and the things I loved in the first round. The one thing of the entire weekend that really stood out to me that kind of melts your heart in the Tyreek Hill situation. Is that a royal disaster for the Chiefs? 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff.
During the football season, every Tuesday at this time, I do my herd hierarchy. And we judge the top 10 teams. And this time of the year, even Vegas came out this weekend. Vegas came out this weekend and released their Super Bowl odds. Division odds, over unders, because now you've got all your coaches set, you got all your free agents set, and you got all your drafts set. So now is the time that I can look. Now, people could get injured in exhibition season and camps, but now is the time I know what I have. This point forward, I feel safe saying I like this team more, I like this team less. And by the way, in the AFC, Vegas has New England 1, Kansas City 2, Indy 3, Cleveland Chargers, Pittsburgh, and in the NFC, which Vegas considers the better conference, Rams, Saints, Philly, Bears, Packers, Cowboys, Vikings, outside shot to San Francisco. So I'll just tell you what I think. I consider everything. I consider schedules. I consider free agent. I consider coach. I consider draft. And let's go. I'll give you my 10, what I believe this morning, and I'll give you a reason for all of them, my 10 best NFL teams.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Dallas Cowboys. I think they have a fairly low ceiling. I think there's some limitations offensively, but I love their roster. I get Amari Cooper for a full year. They added Randall Cobb and the adult grown-up in the room, Jason Witten. I think you'll have a little bit more dynamic offense. They also had a bunch of offensive line injuries last year. They added a very good draft pick to their offensive line. I don't think they'll be as banged up. This is a very good team. Amari for a full year. I do think their ceiling's a little lower than the Eagles and the Rams and the Patriots and you know, teams like that.
Number 9.
Every year in the NFL, there's a surprise team, and mine's the Niners. Jimmy Garoppolo is back. I think they added unbelievable free agents and draft picks. Nick Bosa and Dee Ford combined on an offensive line with Bruckner and Quan Alexander at linebacker. This front seven is going to be one of the better front sevens in the NFL. They also, besides Jimmy G, they went out and got one of the best wide receivers in college football, Deebo Samuel. And that's what they really need. They needed more pass rush and a number one playmaking wide receiver. Listen, don't kid yourself. We know every year a good team goes into the tank. Last year, Jacksonville. And a team that wasn't good becomes very good. You can pick yours. Mine is San Francisco, number 9.
Number 8.
Chargers. And now, it's inches, not feet here with all these teams. except my number one team. Chargers arguably have the best roster in the NFL. Their weakness over the last 2 years has been addressed. They did it again in this draft. They went and got a nose tackle. They have great edge rushers, but not much of an interior push. So they drafted a Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame that will include the interior push. Phillip Rivers sometimes worries me in big games with his decisions, and I don't know if they have an A coach. I think they have a B-plus coach and a B-plus quarterback. Phillip does worry me in big spots, and I thought they really got overwhelmed in that playoff game, a total head-scratcher. You just don't see that with the Patriots, so I'd put them at 8.
Number 7.
Kansas City, a smidge better because I know Andy Reid more and his history. I think Tyreek Hill potentially not being there, I don't think you can replace him. I don't think Patrick Mahomes, when he lost Kareem Hunt last year, was quite as good. They lost Dee Ford, although they did add Frank Clark. I like them a lot. But I just think if Tyreek Hill's not here, he's the fastest player in the league I've seen since Deion Sanders. I've had defensive people in the league say there's no real answer for him. I mean, you got to double him. We don't have anybody that can keep up with him, so I have them at 7.
Number 6.
Green Bay. I like Green Bay a lot. I think, first of all, I thought their draft and their free agent period loaded up heavy on defense. So it's no more excuses. Aaron's got the coach he wants. He's got a new, smart, young coach. More progressive, and I think defensively this will be Aaron's most athletic defense since his Super Bowl year. So I like Green Bay more than everybody else does. I think they win their division.
Number 5.
I like Pittsburgh, but by the way, Vegas likes Pittsburgh a lot too. They got Pittsburgh at 9.5 wins too. I think Le'Veon Bell, they won a lot of games without him last year. They also drafted a good running back that I think could be a semi-replacement for him. And Antonio Brown, I'm sorry, I thought he was a distraction. He didn't show up for Week 17. They had to answer questions about him. I still think this is an elite organization with one of the best GMs. I think it has the best offensive line right now in football. I think they have a Hall of Fame quarterback. They have a number one receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster. They added a very good linebacker to what I think. There's a couple things the Steelers do well. Draft linebackers and draft wide receivers. So I think they're going to be a very good football team.
Number 4.
Philadelphia. Great free agents. Great draft. I like almost everything they do. They added Malik Jackson next to Fletcher Cox on the defensive front. Good luck. Good luck blocking that. And I also thought they drafted the best offensive lineman, Andre Dillard. And as an aging offensive line becomes an issue, they solved it. They also got my favorite sleeper player in the draft, Stanford receiver J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. They also got DeSean Jackson. Carson Wentz loves to throw the deep ball, and he can still run. I think Philadelphia is a very much a Super Bowl threat to a favorite.
Number 3.
L.A. Rams. Added Clay Matthews, veteran Eric Weddle, first draft pick Taylor Rapp, a defensive in-the-box safety. I think the Rams are really good. I think they were humbled in the Super Bowl, a little bit humiliated. I think they'll come back. I think Goff gets better every year. As long as Todd Gurley is healthy, there's not much not to like. Ndamukong Suh's gone, but that's fine. Ndamukong Suh's kind of doing his own thing anyway. You give me Gurley, you give me Goff, you give me Robert Woods, you give me Aaron Donald. There's a lot of playmakers. Cooper Kupp, by the way, comes back. He was not around for the last 2.5 months. He returns now. I like the Rams, number 3.
Number 2.
Indianapolis. Last year, they got beat badly by Kansas City. There was a reason. They weren't as good as Kansas City, and it was on the road. This year, they don't face a cold weather team. They're a dome team. They don't face a cold weather team. And in the last 8 weeks, they faced one elite quarterback, Drew Brees. I don't necessarily think they have the second best roster. I think they maybe have the 8th or 9th best roster. But they were 10-6 last year, and that was after a horrible 1-5 start. They're not getting off to a 1-5 start. I think this team once again had one of the best drafts. Added Justin Houston, a pass rusher. It is a very young team who nailed their first 3 picks last year. I think they nailed their first 3 picks. And frankly, I still think that division is theirs. They have owned Tennessee and have had their way with Houston in big spots. So I just think they have a psychological edge. And number one. New England. Added Michael Bennett, a pass rusher. Added Chase Winovich as a draft pick, a pass rusher. So there was 2 or 3 things they needed. They addressed the pass rushing. They addressed a wide receiver. Now, they did not address the tight end. They got Austin Severian Jenkins, a veteran tight end, a big guy. He's got Gronk size, but I don't think Gronk necessarily blocking ability. But this is the best coach and still among the best quarterbacks in the game, the best system, the best overall coaching staff. They're money at home, and they once again are in a division with three rebuilding teams, Bills, Jets, Dolphins, so they have a chance to go 6-0 in division. Now, by the way, there's a couple teams that missed. Where's Cleveland? I'll explain next segment why I don't have Cleveland in. One of the reasons is all these teams, outside of Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, and I think Aaron's pretty, I don't know, amazing. I don't know what Freddie Kitchens is going to do. Secondly, Chicago Bears and Saints are not in that list.
Right.
I have them 11 and 12.
In Seattle?
I don't think Seattle's roster is as good as the Bears or the Saints. I don't have the Bears and Saints. I have them 11 and 12. Bears 11, Saints 12. I think they both come back a little bit. I thought Chicago was a bit of smoke and mirrors offensively. They were exposed in the playoffs on that. And I think the Saints have had back-to-back wildly emotional playoff losses. I think those start to add up. I think their division will be better. A couple more losses in division. And then I have Cleveland in about the 13 spot. Houston, by the way, doesn't make it.
Right.
I still am not sure. They've answered the questions on, I think, the NFL's worst offensive line. And Seattle, I don't love their roster. Doug Baldwin may retire. I think it's a lot of Russell Wilson and Pete's defensive schemes. They have two great players, Russell and Bobby Wagner. And then they got a bunch of young guys that aren't proven. I didn't love their draft. It was fine. They got draft picks. But that's where we're at. Feel very good about my picks. I have San Francisco higher than most and Indy higher than most. Other than that, I thought it was very, very, very responsible.
You love the Colts.
Loved them last year. They got beat by a better team.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Let's bring in the veteran NBAer for four or five different teams. The Celtics Big Three, the Thunder with Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Kendrick Perkins, 15 NBA seasons. A tough guy you didn't push around. Perks in the house today. Yeah, I want to talk about, so I feel like I could be wrong on this, Perk, and it's great finally to meet you and have you on the
Colin,
show.
Thanks. Big fan, by the way.
Thank you. That I think Houston's trying to manipulate between the Scott Foster comments, between leaking the memo, the flopping, and I think what the NBA is saying is, time out here. We control the series. You're not going to control us. That's what it feels like. How do you think the NBA, the officials, and the Rockets and Warriors respond tonight?
Well, I think it's going to be zero tolerance from the referee points. I think it's going to be a point of emphasis going into the game. The referees are not going to want to hear anything from either side. And I think technical fouls will be issued out early.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they're going to set the tone early. Because at the end of the day, like, it's getting out of control. Let's play basketball.
And let's talk about basketball, yeah. Not officiating.
Yeah, about officiating. Like, at the end of the day, like, everybody was talking about, oh, they missed these calls. But Houston had several times to win this game, several different opportunities to win this game, besides the fouls that weren't called. And I could recall a couple of times KD took shots, and he didn't have a good landing space, and guys were under him. He didn't complain. So, at the end of the day, let's play basketball. I mean, you know, like,
hey, well, let's talk about Scott Foster. Now, Harden complains about Scott Foster. He's a veteran. He's one of the four or five guys we all know. You had a lot of Scott Foster playoff games. Did you like him?
Scott Foster is one of the best NBA refs in the league.
Why?
Today. Because he don't play favoritism. Not saying refs do, but it don't matter who you are. If you foul, if you're Kevin Durant, if you're James Harden, he's going to make the call. If you're Greg Popovich and you said something to him, he'll give you a tick. If you're Doc Rivers, he'll tick you just like he'll tick anybody else. And so Scott Foster actually goes out there and do his job the correct way. He's a great official.
Not a big personality.
Not at all, but he has zero tolerance. He'll give you a warning, a second warning, and then he'll tee you up. But he's going to referee the game the right way.
By the way, this is fascinating. So you were in OKC when they had a young Durant, a young Westbrook, and a mm-hmm. young Harden. You were not only in the games, you were at practice.
Right.
Did you have any sense Harden would be MVP Harden?
I knew James was going to be good, but I didn't know he was going to be this good. But I remember one game in particular. It was we was on our way the year we went to the finals.
Yeah.
And I remember we swept Dallas, and it was game four. And Dallas was actually giving us a great game. And I remember I think James had like 21 in the fourth, and I was like, Jesus Christ. He's really like that. Then after that, he had a couple – the previous season, he had like 40-point games, one in Phoenix off the bench, and I'm like, well, hold on. Then he won Sixth Man of the Year award, and I'm like, okay. Then he came back from the Olympics, and I remember James telling me, he said, man, Perk, it's nothing personal, man. I just feel like I want my own team. And I was like, James, you sure? He's like, man, I feel like I'm a franchise guy. And he went to Houston, and he showed it. He showed it.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with that. Like, it's funny because Kevin Durant, I've heard rumors, wants to go to New York. But unlike a young James Harden, we all acknowledge that Kevin Durant's the world's best player. James was saying, basically, you people think I'm the third best player on this team.
Right.
I'll always support a young guy that says, listen, man, you got me coming off the bench. I'm a franchise guy. Jason Tatum for the Celtics. If it's Kyrie's team and Jason's like, I think I'm a franchise guy. I get that.
Exactly.
I don't get Kevin Durant going from the best team in the league, maybe the best run, making more money in Golden State than he would in New York, to be the man with the Knicks. That I don't get. Explain why he would do that.
Well, I think it's better for KD because at the end of the day, as long as KD is on the Golden State, it's always going to be Steph's team. So it's time for KD to have his own team, in my opinion. Can you imagine KD in New York?
Oh, no, I think it's great for the league.
It's great for the league. It's great for basketball, period. And I just think, you know, he's done what he needed to do in Golden State.
But you know, Perk, you know that you can only be as good as your owner and your management. You know that.
I know.
Boston had really good ownership,
yes,
and you did really well. Yep. New York, James Dolan, you trust him?
I mean, it seemed like he's trying to turn over. I mean, you got to give everybody a second chance, a third chance, right?
I don't know,
Colin. We all have flaws. In some
no,
way.
I'm not saying that. But if I'm a player, I got 12 years to hit it.
Right.
A billionaire has 80 years to make money.
Exactly.
Players got about 12 to hit it. I don't think I'm giving my career up to James Dolan. That'd be hard for me as a player.
Would you think he'd change if he get Kevin Durant?
Well, I think Kevin Durant would change the franchise.
Right.
I think Kevin's so great, he would change the whole game. Let me go to this. So, I liked Boston all season.
Right.
And people kept saying, no Milwaukee, Milwaukee. And I kept saying, listen, Kyrie Irving is the best closer under 6'4 I've seen in my life. Yeah. Isaiah Thomas was close.
I agree.
And I said, just don't get caught up in the regular season, Kyrie. Playoffs come, he's going to flip a switch, mm-hmm, be more coachable, it's going to work, and it has. Do you have some sort of theory about certain players' regular season, playoff season?
Absolutely, and Kyrie is and I'm glad you said Kyrie because he's a definition of what a playoff like he's playoff ready.
He's playoff
so,
Kyrie.
Yeah, he's playoff Kyrie. So, like for example, he started the season off with the Celtics healthy. Came back, killed, make the All-Star team, okay? That's one goal out the way. And then he knows he has to get ready for the long run, which is the playoffs. So after the All-Star break, you see Kyrie, he's sitting out a little bit, back-to-backs.
Dials
back a little bit, getting his rest, making sure his body is right. And then he comes out, playoffs start, and he comes out as a killer. It's simple.
So some guys to you, Perk,
some guys, listen, you have regular season guys and you have playoff guys.
So Chris Middleton is a hard worker.
Right.
Busts his tail, 3 years of college, got demoted to the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, busts his butt, and he's going to give you everything every night. But there's a ceiling to Chris in a huge game. I like him.
Right.
Kyrie, I don't see a ceiling.
No,
so
it's not.
So certain guys, in your opinion, they know.
They listen, know. And it worked that way for some role players. Just think about this, right? So, like, even with Derek Fisher for the Lakers, throughout the regular season, D. Fish, he wasn't good at all. Playoffs came around, he turned on to a whole nother – what people were saying, wow, we wouldn't have won this without Derek Fisher. So you have guys who actually play to make All-Star games and stuff like that, but then you have guys who actually playing – to win championships. So you do have regular season guys and you do have postseason guys.
15 years in the NBA, one of the tough guys, Celtics, Big Three, Thunder, Cavs, Pelicans. Westbrook's a fascinating topic. I'm seen as a hater, and I've said before, he's unbelievably talented. But there are players, it doesn't matter if you played high school, AAU, college, or YMCA. Some guys are easy to play with. Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
You could put Klay on every roster.
Absolutely.
He plays both ends. I think Kawhi could put on a bunch of rosters.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there are players. LeBron James wants the ball. Thank God he's great. But, you know, he can marginalize big guys. He forces Bosch to go outside. You know, he forces Kevin Love. Go outside. Get out of the hole. Westbrook, to me, Perk, has a personality and a certain, like, rigidity. He's here's how I play. I do think he can be tough to play with. Not doubting his athleticism, but in 3 years, they've won 4 playoff games. Is it fair for me to say he's hard? We all played with – like I played at the YMCA with guys, and you're like, that dude is great. He's just hard to play with.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I agree with you to a certain extent because I played with Russ, but I played with a younger Russ. Over the last few years, he's matured a lot better than when I was there. He has, because when I was there – it was a lot worse. I remember times where I only had 5 shot attempts throughout a course of 6 games, right? So what I'm saying is I watch Russ today, and he's matured a lot. He's matured a lot for us, getting his teammates involved and stuff like that. I'll give you one instance. So, for example, we was in a playoff game, and Russ drove to the paint, and he passed the ball to Serge, and it hit his feet. And it was a bad pass, but Serge missed it. It was a turnover, and Russ blew a gasket. He was like, man, that's it, Serge. I ain't passing you the ball no more. So a couple plays went by. We went and sat down, went to the timeout, and I said, well, Russ, listen, man, you can't do that. We need Serge, and we all have flaws. You have flaws we deal with. I have flaws that y'all deal with. So you have to deal with his mistakes. I think – Russ is so competitive that he expects everybody to have his skill and his athleticism.
And his intensity.
And his intensity, and it's not like that. So that's where you could see, you know, that's how it go. But at the end of the day, I don't think playing with – I see a change in him, though. I do. Over the last 2 years, I really see a change in Russ. I really do. He's making passes that he's been making some passes that I haven't seen before.
Finally, do you like the Warriors to win it again?
I do like the Warriors to win it again.
Don't you think, though, it's funny? I've always said that the second best, the best team I ever saw was Jordan's Bulls. Because I think they would take Golden State out of their game. Michael was so physical.
Right.
Rodman was physical. Ron Harper was physical. This, I always tell them, this is the skinny jeans team. If you take out Draymond Green, it's nightclub guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they just all look good.
Right.
But it's, I think if I was facing them, if you take the big three, Garnett, tough guy, you, tough guy, Pierce, good defender.
We'll beat Golden State.
You would get physical with them.
Right.
I mean, that's the way to beat them,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. But I think, like, if Golden State was to happen to match up with the Celtics in the finals, it would be interesting.
I'd pick Boston.
It would be really interesting, especially
– Horford.
Yeah, without Cousins, it would be really, really interesting.
Perk, good meeting you. 15 years in the league. Hope to have you on the show again.
Colin, thanks for having me. Hope to be back.
Yeah, don't mess around with Perk. Perk doesn't take no BS from you, Goulet. Yeah, Goulet can be a trash talker. Don't take any of it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
We call it the three-word game. We do it during the NFL season on Mondays. Joy Taylor joining me in The Herd. So we thought we'd do it now. The coaches are hired. The free agents are in. The draft is settled. Three-word game, best for last. You guys ready to go? Here we go.
After almost 3 hours, Colin apparently hasn't gotten to the point yet. Quit holding out on us, Cowherd. It's the best for last.
Three-word game, NFC. Let's start with the NFC East. Dallas Cowboys. Three-word game. Dak's contract year. He's entering his fourth season. He went 7-2 after they acquired Amari Cooper. And now you get Amari for the entire year. You brought in Jason Witten to calm the chaos of the Cowboys. Second most wins in the NFL since he entered the league. Tom Brady is first. This is the year for Dak to pop and pay him the big money. Eagles, best quarterback returns. Oh, get off Nick Foles. He's going to go 6-10 in Jacksonville. Carson Wentz was an MVP before he got hurt. The last 2 years, however, have ended in injuries. But in 2018, when he was healthy, career highs in passing yards, completion percentage, passer rating. They've added DeSean Jackson. They took the best offensive lineman in the draft. They got their guy back. Giants. Gettleman, no plan. Last year was a quarterback year. They passed on it. Okay, this year was an edge rusher year. They had the sixth pick, and they passed on it again. My argument is, when he steps to the microphone, I don't think he has a plan. I do think Daniel Jones can play, but you're going to be paying him $18, $20 million for 3 years to sit. They lost Odell. They lost Olivier Vernon. They lost Landon Collins. Some of those guys were very important to the locker room. How about Redskins? Haskin too much. Wordplay. I think Dwayne Haskins was my favorite quarterback in the draft. Not if you're asking him to play right out of the chute. His head coach, Urban Meyer, came on our show, loves the kid, recruited him, said he's not ready to run a $5 billion franchise. And because they got Colt McCoy and Case Keenum and Alex Smith is hurt, I think they're going to ask him to play very early. And I think Washington's schedule is brutal early. How about NFC South? Saints, pull back year. Drew Brees turned 40. Never forget, they finished the season 4-3 after finishing 10-1. They looked gassed by the end of the year. They had no first round pick this year. They lost dependable Mark Ingram this year. They've had back-to-back emotional playoff losses. I'm not saying they're a bad team. I feel like they pull back. Panthers. Cam equals Westbrook. Temperamental, fashionista, wildly talented, kind of an emotional roller coaster. And I don't think always easy to play with. Again, Westbrook struggles at the end of years. Carolina started well. Last 8 games, 1-7. Falcons. Ice, maybe. Matty Ice, I like him, but they finished the year 7-9. They did add two offensive linemen in the first round. But this division, last couple of years, it feels like it's trending away from Atlanta and to the Saints. This is kind of an important year. Kyle Shanahan left, and you didn't answer the bell. Now, they had a ton of really bad injuries early, so I think this is a rebound year for Matt Ryan. He did improve from 2017 to 2018 across the board, 20 TDs to 35. Bucks, Jameis or Jame isn't. All right, you'll find out. We got 16 games with Bruce Arians to find out. And Tampa's got wide receiver talent. They got a great young tight end at Alabama. This is the year. Like, you're going to make a decision really quickly. Is Jameis Winston the dude? And if Bruce Arians, because they got talent, if Bruce Arians can't turn it around, Jameis Winston will just be a talented guy who was never the franchise guy. Remember, he got suspended last year for 3 games. He just isn't going to be the guy. If Bruce can't get it right, it's not right. NFC West. Cardinals. Cliff got Kyler. Listen, only the second team in history to draft quarterbacks in the first round in back-to-back years. And this was really all about Cliff Kingsbury. We're bringing this offense, which is all about athletes and quarterbacks. And Kyler Murray is a game-changing athlete. I'll say this, I'm fascinated to watch it. I think it'll sell tickets. And in that division where they're the fourth best roster, they felt they had to take a big swing. It's a big swing, but I think it can work. Seahawks. Russ got paid. 4 years, $140 million. Now the key is draft picks and get cheap on both sides of the football. I didn't love their draft. Doug Baldwin is retiring, it appears. I think next year they'll be battling for third with Arizona in their division. 49ers. Surprise title contenders. I don't care they were 4-12. Jimmy G. And between their free agency and their draft, D. Ford, Quan Alexander, Jimmy G., Jason Verrett, Nick Bosa, I think no team personnel-wise improved more in the last 4 months, free agency and draft, than the 49ers. I also love their coach, Kyle Shanahan. I think they got their backfield right with Coleman from Atlanta. How about Rams? Gurley or Gurney? Todd Gurley got diagnosed with an arthritic knee. That's the franchise. I mean, to me, if Todd's good, I'm good with the Rams. If Todd is a 15-carry-a-game guy or cannot withstand the 16-game assault on your body, I kind of feel differently about the franchise. I still like him, but man, is Todd Gurley great. And never forget this last year. Last two games, 45 rushing yards total, and that offense in New Orleans and in the Super Bowl did not look the same. NFC North Vikings. Cousins rebounds slightly. Kirk Cousins took a PR beating last year. Can I just say this? It was his first year in the system. I do think Cousins has a better second year. They re-signed Adam Thielen, who's a very cagey receiver. I think they got arguably the best offensive lineman in the draft, arguably Garrett Bradbury, the center from NC State. I think last year was a lot of pressure on Cousins and a lot of heat on him. I think, deep breath, he improved slightly. Bears, barely above 500. Listen, Trubisky's last five games, I thought it was a lot of smoke and mirrors. His last five games, five TDs, five picks. I think Matt Nagy's a brilliant coach, and he fooled you. He's a Copperfield. Left, right, trap, lit. But in the end, the last month, everybody got the film on the Bears. Trubisky was incredibly pedestrian, and I think they're a 9-7 football team. For the record, that's what Vegas thinks. Lions, Patriots minus winning. All right, they drafted a tight end that looks like Gronk. They took Danny Amendola and Trey Flowers, and Matt Patricia, the head coach, was the defensive guy for Bill Belichick. They got all sorts of Patriot connections. They just got to turn the L's to W's, and then turn that frown into a smile thing.
Turn that frown upside down.
Yeah, so right now they're the Patriots, you know, without the winning part.
Sounds fun.
Packers. No more excuses. Folks, all sorts of talent. Aaron got the right coach. They've gone heavy defense in the last two drafts. They'll have the youngest, most athletic defense Aaron Rodgers has had since the Super Bowl. I think they're going to reclaim the NFC North and win the division. But now, let's not talk about no defensive help. They've gone massive defense last two free agent periods and drafts. Three-word game. AFC tomorrow.